Maybe bonus content will be how we manage when inevitably we can't record a week.
That
Like when
sounds great.
something happens and we cannot make an episode on time, because we both have the flu or like whatever. Maybe bonus content is the solution for that, is we just put together a pastiche of weird shit that could be a good solution, actually. That is good.
Leverage
Also,
parasocial curiosity.
enjoy our bloopers episode.
You're listening to Nun Pod with Left Grief. Episode. Fuck. What chapter are we on?
Copy of Gideon the Ninth is physically starting to fall apart. Chapter 9 is held together with tape at this point because the spine broke in between chapter or pages 98 and 99. And this is also the copy that like one of my cats peed on. I think that by the time we finish podcasting Gideon the Ninth, this will no longer be a book. It will be a different collection of objects. My cover's also really fucked up. Electo has like bitten it a number of times, so there's like teeth marks all in the cover. It is
It's
barely a book anymore.
now more than a book.
I'm reminded of a foreword to a late reprinting edition of Good Omens, where the authors talked about how when people came to book signings, it was almost never with their first copy of Good Omens because this particular book simply isn't like that. Like the their first copy would have been loaned out and then never came back. And one person came with all of the pages that had disintegrated from the spine in a plastic bag. And yeah, I'm feeling that. I think I'm probably going to make some wall art for my office using pages from my original copy of Gideon the Ninth, and then I will buy a new copy because this copy is also heavily, heavily annotated.
I have a heavily annotated book, and it is a dearly precious object to me. I know it's not so novel for you, but like it's the book that got me into this kind of like deep rereading into books and looking for the internal relationships.
What
And I
book is
still
it?
it's called The Logogryph. It's the one that I had
Oh,
Jessica.
yeah.
Yeah, like where
That one
is
had like weird Kazarian stuff, didn't it?
No, I haven't finished the Kazari one, but that was the second book of alternative format fiction that I got. And that was the insight the Kazarian one was the three parallel dictionaries written in the Christian, Islamic, and Muslim conversion perspectives.
Okay. I want to acknowledge how many mentions of caution tape there are in this chapter.
Was the caution tape for them, or was it for someone previous to them? Did they just put the caution tape up? Like,
It is
who?
described as peeling.
Peeling. Okay, so it's old.
I think it is old.
So who was it for?
The lab text that they ate.
Nom 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 nom. And this is part of why. Okay, so I'm gonna get us off topic again. You could yank me back to the subject later if you want. So I headcanon Kithareya as Southern. She's like Southern Belle to me, and I
I
feel like
love
it
that
works.
solution.
She says you all at one point in this whole speech, and I feel like there you go, there.
100% with you.
But part of the reason that I love that for her is that the like Southern woman
thing is so performative, just like top to bottom. Like that's what the culture is being like you've got this mask of lady on all the time. And like I've done it, I wasn't very good at it, but that's how I do Dulcie when I cosplay Dulcie is I just put on what I was doing in college basically and turn it up to 11. And that's such a fun thing about her is that she is like she's like a rusting Russian nesting doll of fakeness. I don't know what is in the little in the very middle of it. What's the little nugget of Kithareia?
She doesn't even know. John erased it.
Oh, that's so sad.
In the middle is C, redacted.
Oh boy. I need to know so much more about that whole situation, and I hope we get a lot of it in the next. I don't have much. I feel like there's going to be a lot of things that we just never get to know.
I got disqualified from my first Olympic tournament for brutality because I was fighting somebody that I trained with regularly who I outskilled a little bit, enough that I could very reliably beat him in a fight. And in this tournament, which was a student tournament, it was not a serious tournament, I got a very clean shot on him and we both paused and the ref didn't say anything. And so we continued fighting, and I got another really clean shot on him, and the ref didn't say anything. And after the third one, I made what I thought was a funny joke referencing Disney's Aladdin and said in a very dramatic voice, "How many times do I have to kill you, boy?" And that's not allowed. You're not allowed.
I can see it. I
Yeah.
can see it.
My opponent thought it was funny, but the ref did not think it was funny.
And specifically this, I mean, the point at which Pal throws up the wall and Gideon tries to fight through it. And her hand basically necrotizes spontaneously, and then it's fine? Because there's a really detailed description of Gideon's hand withering.
Wait, fucking
It's.
what? What happened?
The flesh melting before her eyes, the fingernails going black and curling close to the skin as though burnt.
This is specifically after she crosses Palamedes' like necromantic barrier. The shimmers in the room is the thing that immediately precedes this.
So that's the field from the avulsion
It
chamber, right?
is. The avulsion chamber is a really intense version of this seal.
Because it's the what makes the avulsion chamber special is that it's this like interwoven with another thing, right? This is just like an entropy field.
When you say like this is like the avulsion chamber, this is still something that Pal threw up,
Yeah.
not okay, yeah.
So
Because
what
I'm like, the
make
avulsion chamber is downstairs still.
So no. Yeah. So the
Yeah,
avulsion
okay.
chamber combines two things in a way that shouldn't be combinable and is only combinable because of Lictor magic. But either of those two things by themselves are things that like a normal necromancer would be able to do. And so he's doing one of those two things.
Would Palamedes have noticed that Gideon's hand withered, perhaps, and then was fine?
Yes, because that's how it works. That's a normal
Oh,
reaction.
wait. Wait. Okay, hold on. I'm picking up what you're putting down here. Okay, hold on. Does the field just create that effect and you retreat
Yes.
from it and it's fine?
Yes.
Or is this part of her healing, like?
Harrow also is deeply negatively affected by an entropy field and is also fine once she pulls back out of it.
Okay.
So if you go into it, entropy happens to you, but if you go back out, the entropy is reversed. If Gideon's sword, as an aside, is 6 feet long and she secretly smuggled it in her trunk is a literal coffin.
Oh my God.
This
Even
is not
on
a
the
3 foot steamer trunk. This
Yeah, even on a
is,
diagonal, we're still like,
That is a human-sized box.
yeah, that is a human-sized box. What? Yeah. Which is actually kind of like yeah, I'd imagine they reuse they have like a reusable standard box on the ninth. Because they're like, you're gonna keep you here for a while, and then we'll take out your bones and wash it and reuse it.
like put the extra stuff in the mausoleum.
It's not going to be wood.
No. That's morbid and hilarious. I wonder if there have been ac if there would have been actual bodies in it prior, or if it would have just been like a standard issue body compatible box. Who
It's
knows?
a real big box for somebody who doesn't own a lot of clothes. The fact that she actually got this over on Harrow is one of the least plausible things
Believable.
about this entire book.
Absolutely. I'm like, is there a false bottom in the box? Like, what's going on here?
False
Like,
bottom,
yeah.
nothing. Why is it 6 feet long?
It is a genuinely ridiculous size for a sword. And like when, and we've talked about this before, longsword doesn't really adequately capture how ridiculous a 6 foot sword is. Something like a God damn it, what are they called? Montante. Montante is a 6 foot sword, which is honestly different than a long sword. Practice, like, yeah. So when we get to Gideon fighting with a two-handed sword, I'm very excited. Yeah, and thinking that like Eglemonate anticipated that Gideon might pull this.
I find it sort of humorous and delightful that as deep and thorough and detailed as Muir's knowledge of sword fighting clearly is, she didn't ever talk to anybody about what it's like to fly with one.
Hard it is to find a box that fits one.
It's really hard.
Like, it's really hard. Like you can maybe use a golf club traveling case if your rapier is small enough, but like
It's small enough.
if it's a rapier, and but if you're working with a long sword, like
You
good
gotta
luck.
have it like a ski case. But the ski case isn't gonna be wide enough for your pommel.
Like
Your
it's
pommel, your cross guard. Like your cross guard is not gonna
yeah.
fit. It's you need a sword box. And so
And like there's even people out there, I wanted to get one, even though I had no real justification for needing one. But there's a guy, I don't even know if it's a guy. There's someone out east who was making like a sword specific roll top backpack. And I was like, I need it. And it was like specifically made to fit like four or five long swords and like a bunch of gear. Like walk into the park with your friends, you can just have your backpack full of swords. And even that's better than like most of the options out there.
backpack where he keeps his montante.
Backpack where he keeps his Montante. Montante backpack. Montante backpack.
Well, are we going
Okay.
to do the introduction first where I actually get to meet Claire?
Yes. So, Knight and Claire, I did not realize that y'all had not actually met each other. This is
No.
crazy.
Yeah, it's been almost a decade of us, I guess, avoiding each other by accident, which is honestly kind of impressive.
Right? Because I
Yeah.
know there was, you either came to St. Louis, I think, or were, I know you were in the States at some point, and I was like, gonna see you, but I think I was visiting family and I had missed you by like a day or something. So.
Yeah.
Claire's come to California, but often when Claire was in California, we were hanging out like in LA or we were at Wasteland.
That's
And
right.
so it
Yeah.
wasn't just like hanging out in Santa Barbara together. Claire was gonna come to St. Louis and then that kind of fell through.
Ah, okay.
And then, Hannah and I went to Vancouver to visit Claire twice.
Yeah, I think so. That sounds true.
Wait, once I came by myself.
Yeah, that was the
Yeah.
first time.
Did Hannah
The
come twice?
first time was with Hannah and at my old place near the park.
Yeah.
And then the second time was at this place.
Yeah. It didn't even occur to me that y'all hadn't met because we spent so much time like having video chats or like being on lives together when Knight and I
Yeah.
were living in the same house. And
Yeah, that's the
so,
thing that's
like, you
like
were
really
such a big
quiet.
part of my life.
It's like,
Well, I actually know your voice because I'm so used to hearing your voice. I knew your
oh.
voice by sound, but I was usually, I was in and out because, man, at one point I was working two full-time jobs, which I'm
True.
going to be doing again. Oof. But yeah, I was a very busy bee, which I
It's
can't seem to escape from.
because
That
like
is literally
I
the hardest working
imagine
person.
that like similarly to Han and myself, like your life has seen like two or three different, entirely different shapes in that span of time. Like it's now that I know you, I'm gonna have to like check to see what picture I've actually like painted of you from what I've learned over time and like how that references against like the person that I know am now knowing. It'll be funny. Be like the lore. Now I'm like
Yes.
I have all just lore.
I thought you were bigger, like stockier.
I used
I
to
don't.
be. I've been quite sick the past couple of years, and so I actually am quite a bit smaller than I was for most of the time that Han and I have known each other. I'm like, yeah, I was more orc sized in the past. I'm a
Fair
bit more
enough.
half orc now.
Well, I hope healing goes well.
Thank you. It's going pretty good.
Good.
It's in a pretty okay place. Though mind you, I should eat actual breakfast and not just coffee.
I
That would
suppose.
probably be in my favor.
Accurate.
I have a sandwich. I have
Oh,
a
good.
nice sandwich. Yeah.
So I didn't know you played instruments. You play the violin and the guitar?
This is my cello. I've been learning it by
Okay, cello.
myself, just self-taught for like the past 2 or 3 years. And I'm now at the place where I can start experimenting into making like covers. So I play and sing. I don't like, I've never had any proper training. So I'm just someone experimenting with an instrument with it, which has
Very cool.
been wild. I had a bit of violin lessons. So I knew enough of the technique that it's been okay. And then I play, so that's a guitar. But what I actually play is a baritone ukulele, which is the high four strings of a guitar. So the chords are shaped partially like guitar chords. So I thought of it as like a baby step to guitar, but actually my hands can't really deal with that. Like my hands struggle with the cello. The smaller neck is, yeah, I have hand issues. So there's interesting like stuff there, but I play and I sing.
Very
And
cool.
this coming year, I've kind of been challenging my friends to perform because I've never really performed, but I've been making music for like 10 plus years.
Nice.
It's something I really love, and I'm starting to like gather people around and organize jams. And my last 2 weeks, I had most this past week I was working, but the past 2 weeks I had off for the summer with the daycare was closed, and I spent a lot of it like traveling around the local area and like jamming with people,
Heck yeah.
including with my dad while he's playing bagpipes, which was so cool.
Nice. That's pretty cool.
It was really, really quite special. I had a lot of special moments playing music with people. So it's, yeah, I love co collaborating, and it's such a like energetically, like, I don't know, talking and making music with other people is a certain type of juice that is just so good.
We sort of accidentally started to get into this before we started recording. So can we engineer ourselves an entry point into talking about what door this is?
Yes, may
Yeah, please.
I? I've been trying as we're reading this chapter to start like making a map in my brain. So it's kind of giving us these spaces that we have later scenes in. And my gut started clenching immediately when we got to this door. Like my anxiety was building. I couldn't like I actually put a, the thing that ups, one of the things that upsets me most about this book behind this door. I put like us learning about Jane Marie's death behind this door. But it turns out that I was wrong. But the vibes are still deeply unsettling. We're talking about what's actually behind this door, and we determined it was a lab.
Where does Jean-Marie die? Because she does die in one of the labs. It's possible that you're still right.
Because like my emotional reaction, which like it, out of the many awful events in this book, that's one that I often bring up as like me having the most gripe with. I mean, it's part of the book, but I'm like, nah. It sits behind this door for me. This door is very eerie.
But that's not behind that door. They were hiding in. Oh no. You're right. You're right. Sorry. Yes, because I remember the description is Pyrrha's room when she finds the note.
So it is behind this door.
I think. Yeah, I think you're right.
I'm
Sorry.
trying to
Okay.
figure it out. I'm so confused.
Can we find a map?
Interestingly, AI overview of room X203 does confirm multi-death theory. It says Gideon and Jean-Marie are brought to this room. Oh no. This AI is very confused. A character named Isaac brings Gideon and Jean-Marie to this room. That's not what happens. He makes the executive decision. That's not what happens. To rest in X203 where the two women are killed. I do think that part's correct. But that's not important.
Oh, where both of them are killed.
That's what the AI says, but it is wrong about the rest of the sentence.
Multi-death theory, right. Damn. Yeah, okay. That's a
Well,
new piece
yes.
for me to
Okay,
consider.
I found it. Oh yeah, I do. This is all of this is going to get cut. This is not for this episode, but I do believe that Gideon was killed with Jean-Marie, and that's why she was full of bone fragments, because it wouldn't make sense not to kill her, kill them both. And so
Yes.
I think Dulce or Kithaera does kill them both, and then Gideon just like gets back up, and Kithaera is like, interesting.
Yes.
But that's my personal. Okay. So Kithaera immediately clocks that the way Gideon is holding this sword is not how you hold a rapier, despite the fact that Gideon had talked herself through standing in the proper stance.
This is where I have written in my notes, get sword facts from sword folks. Hey, sword folks. Does this make sense? I feel
Let
like
me
it
show
makes sense
you.
to
I
me.
actually
have in arm's reach the exact thing that I need to show you how this makes sense. I have one tool that will show us both.
The
I love
fact that you needed to
experts.
take a shirt off for that is that you're like, just wait. Woof.
I'm ready.
I was on a live stream earlier reading this stuff aloud, and I was talking about swords, and so I got my swords out of the closet. Anyway, so this is the sword that I teach, and it's called a Messer. The fun thing about this is you can use one hand. And so holding a rapier is your body is more in like parallel, one foot is forwards, one hand is down, your shoulders back. Holding a long sword, your body moves more like this, your hand is down below, and you're gonna be a bit more square because you have more coverage. Here, because you have such a thin plane, you want to hide your body behind it. Here, you can actually give yourself a better physical structure for a more forceful engagement. Here, you want to stay back because you're working on a, this is your point of contact, and it's not very protective, but here you have all of this point of contact, both offensively and defensively.
So that to me seems like it would be a lot more obvious than I was thinking, too.
This is a
So I was
big
expecting kind of
difference.
subtle changes, but like.
A draw that comes out. So Gideon draws and tries to get the form and then relaxes her body and like grabs the pommel. So what this would actually look like, here, let me grab my sword that's more rapier shape. So
Visual aids.
Gideon's holding a sword more like this one.
Pretty.
So there isn't actually room for two hands in this guard. This is a basket hilt, so it means that it's designed to protect the whole hand, and the pommel at the end is for balance, more than anything else. And so she's drawn this shorter blade, it's come in front of her body, and as she's relaxed and stopped coaching herself through the positioning, her hand has come looking for that long grip at the bottom, and all she has found is a pommel.
Resting and on, yeah, there you go.
And it looks kind of awkward because there's nothing here to grab onto. And now my arm is awkwardly tight into my body, seeking that longer handle. And I'm kind of offline and not sure how to actually protect my body in this very unnatural way of holding this tool.
And it's noticeable. There you go. Okay. So
Yeah.
that's realistic.
I also would like to personally fight Tamsin Muir in a parking lot regarding her choice to describe Magnus as terminally jolly. Fuck you, man.
I actually kind of get this description because to me it reminds me of the like one uncle at the barbecue who's cracking jokes about everyone. Like it doesn't matter what type of time you're having, he's having a good time. He has a beer, he has a plate, and if you're next to him, you're having a laugh. So
And gentian eyes was used to describe Dulcie's eyes. It's a dye that can be used as an antiseptic.
is it a flower-based dye? Because I thought gentian was a plant.
I don't know if it's flower-based. It might be derived from a plant. But yeah, gentian violet is a certain type of purple dye
Ooh.
that's got medical applications.
Yes, it is a rot derived from a plant
Is it a violet?
with a somewhere between, cobalt and violet flower.
It's a very pretty color.
So we're talking about also a rare eye color.
This series loves
Hilarious.
its rare eye colors.
You know what? You know what? Who loves rare eye colors? Anybody who's writing magic.
True. Like violet eyes in particular is such a trope thing, which honestly, I that's probably on purpose, right?
Heterochromia and violet eyes. It's a thing.
Give the love interest character violet eyes. I see you, Tamsin.
Where do you think Dulcie is? Dulcie, where do you think Katharina
Ooh.
is? She's missing.
Right
Oh, we
now.
know where Dulcie is. She's one floor
Well,
up in
yeah.
a burn box.
Yeah,
Ooh.
exactly. What is Kithra doing
What's she
right
up
now?
to? Is she fucking around with one of the tests?
Because she's almost always on the terrace, so it seems like she's having a good physical day, or she's had Pro carry her somewhere, or she's having such a bad day that she's just in bed.
Or she's doing something that she can't proxy Pro to do.
I wonder
Because
what
she's talked
that
about
would
how
be.
she's set him to all these tasks. And we speculated earlier in a previous episode that, like, she can kind of pilot him because he's basically a puppet. But that has limitation. There's different ways in which necromancy might affect the way she does that. And I don't know how much you can project that through a puppet. The entire structure of what has happened here, she is now deeply opposed to. She would like to destroy this knowledge. So, my strongest theory would be she is out trying to do that.
Most of the houses at this point don't seem to have like connected fully to the puzzle. It's mostly just the sixth,
True,
the
true.
fifth, the ones who are absent. The sixth and the seventh were perennially absent, and then Harrow's out there too.
Well, she's the seventh. The fifth are only sort of engaged. And the fourth aren't allowed to go into the dangerous basement.
Gideon and Harrow are barely older than the ghastly teens.
They don't have Magnus and Abigail.
They don't have Magnus and Abigail, and there is this really striking contrast because they are the only unaccompanied children here.
Gideon Nav hates necromancy very much. As I mean, obviously she has an internally incoherent value system with respect to her like emotional revulsion at necromancy, but also her romanticization and sexualization of necromancy at the same time. But this conversation where Pal says she was down there last night too, and if I'm correct, never surfaced. Her blood's on the floor down there. I fucking love the line, because necromancers lived bad lives, he added, to clarify, her intravenous blood. Her intravenous blood. Gideon is actively on this rescue mission and is still like, she's so gross. They're so gross.
Yeah, this thinking about, I was like going back looking for Cytherea footage, Kytherea. I switch up the way that I say it every single time.
I thought it was
But
Cytheria on first read, and then I listened to the audiobook and was like, it's what?
I think I went with Kithareia when I was reading it, but it's supposed to be Cytherea. Is that what it's? Yeah, it's in
No,
the.
there's a pronunciation guide. Because the audiobook also doesn't necessarily follow the pronunciation guide, so it almost creates like multiple
I feel like that gives me permission to just choose the one that I like the best.
Kithareia is what it says in the pronunciation guide.
Oh, okay. So maybe what it was that I went Cytherea first and then change, because I definitely changed which one it was. I don't
Amusingly,
know.
she says that it's specifically not Kitharia. And I'm like, nobody thought it was that.
Literally nobody.
There were so many other options that you didn't even think of.
Reference to Aphrodite. How?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Interesting. But yeah, anyways, I was looking for Kithareia evidence and it's making me want to do it again, so she
Okay.
might be my next batch.
That's
To get my sin up.
I just Googled Kithareia and the top result was not what I was expecting.
Do tell.
American pornographic actress.
You know what's funny? I just learned that through an entirely different angle. I was browsing on an adult media site and I was like, that name is familiar. I wonder if she's a fan.
No,
That's
well, I mean,
hilarious.
I don't know if she's a fan, but
Yeah,
she,
which came first?
the porn actress, it
Okay.
seems like, she's 43. She's from Salt Lake City, Utah.
I want to email her and ask her why she chose that for her performance name.
Does she fit the description?
It's a reference to Aphrodite.
It's a reference
Oh.
to Aphrodite.
She has brown hair and brown eyes, so she doesn't fit the description super closely. Won the 2005 AVN Best New Starlet Award.
Her.
Has a production company called Kithareia Productions.
Nice.
That
I love that.
we're about to discuss the Kithareia production ourselves.
She had a talk show called Goddess of Gush.
In my head, that's an in-universe fact.
Okay, anyway. Kithareia is just another name for Aphrodite. That's the connection. They simply are different like aspects with different local cults.
I do like the idea of a vengeful Aphrodite. That's cool. I could
I feel like she's
really,
earned it.
yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting. The Kithareia refers to the Greek island Kythra.
So many links.
Yeah.
The layers.
The layers.
This is, I think of Mira as a writer, and I'm like, these are things that in her development as a writer, she has also experienced and gone through.
And I think it's really interesting because the relationship that I have had the most sort of ethical difficulty with, the one that I find the most challenging, is Gryddlehark. Because
I would
that's,
agree.
she owns her.
It's such
Yeah.
a power dynamic thing, and it's such a like they have such a history of like straight up like violence and abuse. Like,
And I think my second most challenging relationship is Mercy Morn plus any man.
Can you expand on that for me?
This is not going to fit into this episode, but I sure will. This goes straight
Please
into the
do.
bonus content bin. I read Mercy Morn as a lesbian. And I read her
Ooh.
sexual encounters with John and with Augustine as completely instrumental.
Manipulative
And
and
yeah,
yeah.
I experience her encounters with them and her encounters of the kind of sexuality that characterizes the literal relationships as something that is fundamentally at odds. Not only do I read her as a lesbian, I read her as a hardcore monogamous lesbian. I
That
don't think
feels right to me.
she's
I get that.
like
Yeah.
I don't think she's interested in casual sex. I don't think she's interested in sex with men. And I think that coming back to like I read her anger at Augustine for having to do another threesome as no matter how powerful she gets, she still has to subvert her reproductive autonomy to male desire. She's literally a demigod, and it doesn't stop it.
Yeah, I feel like she does have this very specific type of resentment that feels so pointed that that kind of makes sense to me.
This, I think, relates similarly to Kithraea's resentment around she's literally a demigod and she still has to play the disability perception game.
I think there is a lot of that in this series in general with the Lictors of like how no matter how powerful you get, fucking God is still doing his thing.
Still have to
Well,
play.
it's still a man.
and
Oh.
God still feels powerless no matter how powerful he gets, because I think that's sort of the claim of the series is like this whole structure of power is rotten to the core. There's never going to be enough. You're always going to be hungry.
The starving ghosts, the series.
Because Gideon, you know, is still under the impression that she's going to join the cohort after all this.
She kind of does.
Yeah.
Parts of her do.
Yes. That's true.
I shared my annotations. I've finished annotating in the Google Drive up to the end of chapter one, and I'm working on chapter two. And I shared it, and somebody on Reddit was like, "Not to be stupid, but how do you read this?" And I was like, "Well, it's hard. Like, this is a project in ergodic literature. It takes a non-trivial amount of effort to navigate. Sorry,
So
that's
this week,
the
twice, I got related feedback about our podcast in a really interesting way, given that I also had a pre-production meeting for this new podcast that I am, I guess, starting.
Nice.
So both my business partner and someone that I've been seeing ha have listened to it and were like talking about the language that we use in describing it and like maybe even a third friend was talking about the way I talk. And I think maybe I had been talking about the podcast, but it wasn't that she had listened to it. Anyway, so like the language that we like to play in these ideas with is not plain language. And I think it definitely focuses the listenership on the people who read the same way we want to be reading. Like I even Sigmund, I texted Sig this week, and Sig's listened to it, and it's just and like, and Sig's had the interesting experience of like enjoying also discussing things in that way, but having no real relationship to the material that we're talking about. So it's been interesting seeing like it really narrows in the audience, but in like a way that. I think about a recent comment on the Love Notes doc of like a really specific little criticism that I think is delightful and hilarious, where someone is like saying, "Why didn't you mention this thing? It's really interesting," because that means that someone is engaging with the material in the way that we would.
Yeah, I actually responded to that person because that piece of feedback was given in a Discord from someone who actually hopefully will be a future guest on the show.
Cool. Beautiful.
This is somebody that we have plans to connect with to be a guest. And so I was like, we actually did talk about that in the like when we recorded the show, but it didn't make it into the episode because what we had to say about it wasn't that interesting.
Sure,
We did talk about that, but we didn't talk about it a lot, and we did like you should have been there, man.
yeah, I like that 'cause it's like I was talking about it with a friend last night who was like, I wish I could just like call in. And I'm like, that we could do that. Like, so it's been interesting developing an awareness of people that I know listening to it. 'Cause this, like, I have been talking on the internet for a long time, but usually people just watch it and don't really engage in that kind of feedbacky way. It's a funny feeling knowing your friends just want to listen to you talk.
I had dinner this week with one of the creators and the editor of Resting Glitch Face, which is an all-woman
It's
Shadowrun actual
amazing.
play. And
Very
we
cool.
just like had burgers and beers and like sat around and talked about making a podcast. And one of the things that she recommended to us was to have a lore keeper because I mentioned that already, we'll film for 2 hours and then we put out a 40 to 60 minute episode. Some stuff doesn't get mentioned. And from our perspective as creators, we've had this conversation, but from an audience perspective, like they don't actually see everything that we talked about or everything that we said because those conversations get edited down, for clarity, for flow, for time, like whatever, like some things that we talk about just don't make it into the show. And so I know what personal lore we've discussed while filming, but I don't know which lore has actually been dropped.
So like one of the things that we were talking about at one point, I think it was around cosplay was the topic, but it was like ended up being like a lot of very personal lore. And by the end of like that bit, we were like, yeah, let's no. It was after you edited where you were like, yeah, let's like hold back on the lore.
Yes, some of the detail. I mean, and some of that was, getting into discussing individual ex-partners. And that's a weird, like, our podcast is
Yes.
not us talking about our individual ex-partners. That's weird.
Totally. Yeah.
Except each other a little bit. But so yeah, I know some of our individual relationship stuff. There's also, and maybe this is bonus content, there is so much discussion of our personal relationships with Judaism and our personal religious trajectories that didn't end up making it into the show. And so we're going to have to remember later on when we want to dig into theology that like we haven't situated ourselves. Like we actually have we mentioned what our current religious practices are? I don't remember.
Sure, yeah. Cool. That yeah.
So yeah, my friend at Resting Glitch Face was like, you need to have a person who listens to your show, who is your lore keeper that you can check in with. Also, as we've discussed, the way that we present our relationship is not highly legible.
And I like that is very heartwarming to me because like that's kind of been the like intentional motif since the beginning and has turned out to be a deep safety mechanism for me as an individual. So I'm like, yeah, no, that checks out.
Yeah, across the decade that we have loved each other, having more information about how we conceptualize our relationship does not give anyone insight into what we are doing.
It's really nice. I really quite like it. Yeah, it's great.
Come back with a warrant, etc.
But we don't recognize that judge, so that warrant's no good.
It is insane, by the way, that we decided to do a weekly structure for our first podcast for which we have no funding and no experience. What a fucking choice that we made.
Yeah.
It's going great, but it was insane.
I have come to love the part where I'm like, I have no idea how to do this, but that's not a barrier.
Yeah, I think we both have just a lot of gay audacity.
Yeah. And
I
I'm
think so.
starting to enjoy the fact that I don't know, like I don't notice it. It's just an idea happens and I'm like, yes. I don't think, do I know how to do thing? I think I want to make thing. And sometimes that works.
Also, both of my cats have Locktomb names. My cats are Alecto and Harrow, and I have made them theme toys. They have a little John Gaius doll. Alecto loves to bunny kick, and it's the best thing ever. They also have a bunch of bloody knife toys that they will carry around in their mouth, and it's great. Oh, they also I made Harrow a no, I made Alecto. I guess it's both of theirs, but a little ninth house sword
Oh, please
full of
share the
catnip.
story of how Harrow joined your family.
Sure. So I adopted Alecto 3 years ago. 2 years ago, 3 years, I think, shit, I don't know. 2 or 3 years ago. And I got her the like legal route. I went to a cat rescue and adopted her with paperwork and everything. And she likes to escape a lot. She also, so I knew that I wanted a black cat with yellow eyes and wanted to name it Alecto. I absolutely shopped aesthetically because I wanted to name my black cat Alecto. And she called out to me as the correct black cat, and she absolutely is. She enjoys biting and trying to get into the fridge. My partner Hannah calls her Ice Lolly Bimbo because she tries to get into the fridge. She loves cave, and she does not understand that you don't bite your friends that hard. All of these scars and shit are from her clumsily climbing onto me and then just scratching the shit out of me because she doesn't understand that I'm not a tree. But she also likes to try to go outside. She does not know what she wants to do when outside. Things she has attempted while outside are like climb 1 foot up a tree and then freeze. She mostly likes to go under the front porch and then just eat dead grass. And most of the time when she escapes, I can just be like, hey, baby, we're gonna go back inside. And she's like, okay. But one time she got out and it was dark and she's a black cat. And so it was really hard to find her and we lost track of her. And we found this black cat and brought it into the house. And I was like, I don't think this is my cat. Hannah and I actually went back through our old text messages and reread this because we were trying to figure out when Harrow came.
Yeah.
And it's such a fucking funny exchange because I'm like, guys, I don't think this is my cat. And everybody's like, of course, that's your cat. That's totally your cat. And I'm like, I don't think this cat has ever been in my house before. This cat is weirdly chill being in my house, but I don't think this is my cat. I just watched her figure out the top opening litter box. This is not my cat. And so then I'm putting up the weirdest posters that are like, this cat is lost. This identical cat was found. And eventually I found Alecto, and Alecto and Harrow looked at each other and went, all right, and immediately got along. I had taken Harrow to the vet to see if she was like microchipped or something. She was not microchipped, she was not fixed, and the vet was like, this is your cat now. And I was like, oh, we weren't sure that this was enough apartment for two cats. And so I actually had her fostered somewhere else for a while, and the cats there, one of the cats wanted to murder her, and they could like they she was quarantined in another room, but they were like trying to introduce them and they could not be introduced. The other cat was going to murder her. And this was the chillest, kindest, sweetest cat with two cat buddies. And for whatever reason, Jinx just looked at Harrow and was like, on sight, bitch. So she can't get along with other animals, except she does get along with Alecto. And they are awkward lesbians. They spend most of their time wrestling, and they have, over the last year and a half, moved very subtly towards being able to cuddle, but they still don't cuddle. Sometimes they lick each other and don't immediately start biting.
It took my cats like years and years. One of my cats had to train the other one to cuddle.
Harrow did teach Alecto how not to bite your friends.
How?
I don't know. Probably by biting her.
Okay. I was like, there's a quick way, and then there's a more creative way. I don't know.
What's weird is that skill normally happens in a specific developmental phase. And I was very aware of the fact that she had kind of gotten past that phase and had accepted that my cat was just going to be a bad biter forever. And was like, this is just, she's just weird. She did not have proper socialization. And so it's really surprising, actually, that introducing Harrow, she was able to pick up like bite inhibition, but she doesn't bite me anymore.
This guy,
Charles.
cat, like it's such a good example between my two cats, of which like one of them was, I adopted her feral at 10 months, and him I got 12 weeks from the SPCA. Like he will play rough, but he has inhibition. Like it's very much social rather than, but like her, she's touch averse, and if she's got her teeth and claws out, she's meaning to use them. Like it's such a different relationship with their bodies.
Yeah, same. Harrow is actually extremely skillful at restricting her violence. She loves to play rough and will initiate wrestles multiple times a day, but she always has her claws retracted when playing with humans. She never bites during play. She's extremely skilled at knowing how rough to be. She just loves to bite. Like, she bites Alecto multiple times a day out of nowhere. She's just like, hey, bitch, it's time. But she's
Awkward
really,
lesbians.
really good about not using claws and teeth with human friends. Whereas Alecto, less good at that. Better at bite inhibition, but claws just akimbo, just absolutely wild.
So we can do so many intertextual readings between your cats and the books as we go through the chapters. It's going to be
Somebody asked me how long we had been planning to make Nunpod with Left Grief before we started making it, and my answer was the day after we recorded the first episode.
it was like such a just like afterthought of a converse during a con, like we're just like having coffee and you're like, do you want to do a podcast about Gideon the Ninth? And I was like, yeah.
The way I remember it was, what if we reread Gideon the Ninth together as a way of having structured social time? But oh, we should record it because other people would be interested in us having that conversation.
That's true.
And then we started recording it, and then we were like, that's called a podcast. That's if you record a conversation once a week for other people to listen to, that's what a podcast is.
And like we can look at that as something like we've had no experience with, but we used to do live streams together. Like we've been doing like let's make a thing for other people for a long time.
Yeah, true. I guess that's actually the nature of our relationship, is having a social creative practice in public for some fucking reason.
We have done that forever.
That
Like
is literally gave each other tattoos on a live stream. All
good times.
right, let's finish this episode.
Great.
Nunpod with Left Grief is created by Claire Beans and Han Cayley and edited by Han Cayley. Our music is Only Human by Philip Ayers. Today's cover art is Han with their wife. Visit us at nunpod.com, that's NUNPOD.com, and get our attention online with the hashtag Nunpod. Hey, thanks for listening. We really love that you do that.